Welcome to the Financial Literacy Bootcamp, where certified financial planner Dominique Henderson discusses financial topics in plain English for the investing public. Dominique is the owner and founder of DJH Capital Management, LLC, a fee-only registered investment advisory firm offering comprehensive financial planning and wealth management services to entrepreneurs. You can visit them on the web at www.djh-capital.com or on social media by the hashtag Financial Literacy Bootcamp. Now here's the host of the Financial Literacy Bootcamp, Dominique Henderson.
Hi, this is Dominique Henderson, host of the Financial Literacy Bootcamp podcast. This week on the show, I have a very special treat for you. I recently had a conversation with Mr. Ernest Owusu, former defensive end in the National Football League, who played for the Minnesota Vikings and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. On the Financial Literacy Bootcamp, we are continuing our discussion around solutions to the career transition problem. And as you know, part of our mission for the Financial Literacy Bootcamp podcast is to promote financial literacy and also some of the tools that successful individuals have used to make a career transition from sports into the business world. And this conversation with Ernest was a very enlightening one as we talked about what it was like to compete at the National Football League level from his perspective as an undrafted free agent. The transition process he went through when an injury related to his sickle cell trait caused his premature exit from the league, and some of those crucial decisions he made during that time. We also talk about his money habits while in the spotlight of the National Football League and some of the discipline he used. And finally, make sure you listen all the way to the end to hear about how he's used tragedy in his life to find a real passion around becoming an advocate for the community of individuals coping with this sickle cell trait and all he's doing right now to build awareness within the athletic community. And without further ado, here's this week's episode of the Financial Literacy Bootcamp with Mr. Ernest Owusu. Welcome to the Financial Literacy Bootcamp. I'm your host, Dominique Henderson, and the Financial Literacy Bootcamp is designed to help the financial services industry to become more relevant, reliable, and respected to those we intend to serve. And we do that each week by describing financial topics in plain English for the investing public. Today, I have a very special treat, a very special guest, Mr. Ernest Owusu, met through LinkedIn, of all places. That's because, of course, that's how you meet people nowadays, is on social media. But continuing discussion that we started earlier this year with solutions to the career transition problem. And Ernest has a very, very great story. I was very intrigued by him when we met. And I'll just let you guys listen to our conversation today because he has a very captivating story. Good morning, Ernest. How are you doing now?
Not bad. Thanks so much for having me today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. It's been we've talked a couple of times, but it's been really great to come across somebody that has been in the National Football League, made it to that level, and made it a very, very good career transition. And I think you have a lot to tell in your story. But just real briefly for the audience that not familiar with you, just give us a little bit of your athletic resume and maybe what school you went to and who you played for and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, sure thing. So I'm from Nashville, Tennessee. I played high school football there, and then I actually played 1 year of prep school in New Jersey. Then after that, I went on to play college football at Cal Berkeley. After that, I played for the Minnesota Vikings, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I had a couple of brief stints in the Canadian Football League as well as the Arena Football League.
Okay, cool. So and you played what position?
Defensive end.
Okay,
defensive
end. All right. Yeah. You were the quarterback sacker.
Sacks for days. That's always the goal.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about, because you're not doing that now, obviously. You're in sales and marketing. And talk about your exit from the game of football, because you brought up something when we were talking earlier, which I thought was a really good point. And you were saying, you know, it's inevitable, basically, that you're going to exit the football game at some point, and very rarely do guys get to retire on their own terms. Kind of unpack what your story was and then maybe a little bit of that statement that you made.
Yeah, sure thing. So for me, I mean, and that's, you kind of hit on the nail of what we're talking about. It's, you know, from my experience in being in the NFL, very rarely do people get the opportunity to leave on their own accord. Mm-hmm. And my situation was off an injury. I had a situation where I had a complication from the sickle cell trait while I was in training camp with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And once that happened, I got injured. And as a result, I ended up getting cut. Mm. Now, that it was really hard.
Yeah.
It was really hard because, you know, the whole lifelong dream of making it to NFL and, you know, eventually getting that big contract, that's something that I always wanted to do. And then, you know, being sidelined by an injury. I'd never been hurt my entire life in football. So when that happened, you know, it was literally at the worst time. And I was put in a situation where, you know, I got hurt, and due to the type of injury I had, I was essentially blacklisted by some of the teams because people didn't necessarily want to take a risk on me. But it was tough, you know, it was tough. Like, having that injury and then having, you know, I was trying really hard to fight back and to get back onto a team, it was tough. But, you know, that's just how it is with football, especially at the professional level. Like, very rarely are you going to be in a situation where, you know, you're that Hall of Famer guy, or, you know, you're that person who makes a certain amount of money, you can just retire on your own accord. Most people that I was with and all the teammates I had, it's either you got cut or you got injured. Wow. And it's a tough pill to swallow, but that's just the nature of the beast. You know, the NFL, it is a business. And I'm sure everyone hears that all the time, but for a lot of people, like kind of like myself, you know, we didn't really want to accept that, it was going to end, that there was going to be that day where I wasn't a football player anymore. But mine kind of came out of a weird situation with the injury, and it was really tough. It was hard to deal with that.
Yeah, so you said a couple of things that were like kind of intriguing that I want to delve into a little bit more. So, you know, give us a timeline on when this happened. So, when did you first enter the league, and then when did this happen?
Okay, sure thing. So, I first entered the league in 2012. At that point, I was with the Minnesota Vikings.
Okay.
I got cut in November of that year, and then the following year, immediately afterwards, I got signed to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So I didn't have that period of being cut and just being waiting around. I got pretty lucky to be signed to a team pretty quickly.
Okay.
So then that happened, and coming, I think it was July of 2013. So the next year after that, I got hurt on literally the very first day of training camp.
Wow.
And if you have a serious injury during training camp, and especially like in my situation, if you're an undrafted free agent, mm-hmm. It's a wrap after that. It's really tough to, because the whole thing with the NFL, it's a business, you know. Yeah. And if you don't have a team that's invested in you financially, then they're not willing to sit with you and be there with you when you do get hurt or when things don't go well. So I was in a situation where I got hurt in training camp, which is literally the worst time to get hurt because I'm trying to fight to get back onto a team.
Yeah.
And at that point, it was tough. I got cut with an injury. And then, you know, as the season's progressing, you know, teams see that I'm hurt and they don't want to take a chance on me. And, you know, regardless of how things went in the previous year, it was pretty much done after that. But yeah, it was tough. It was really hard just because of the timing of when I got hurt.
Yeah. So you're saying it's not all fame and glory like we, you know, what we may see on TV.
It's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really not. And I honestly, for me, the thing that was hard about going from college to the NFL was, like, in college you don't realize that it's a business. You know, you're just out there playing. You're having fun and playing for the glory of your school, your teammates, all of that. But then when you get to NFL, I was so shocked by how much things change. You know, I loved my experience in NFL, but it is a business. You know, I was an undrafted free agent who didn't have any money tied down to him. So when I got hurt, the team doesn't have an investment in me. And there are so many other athletes that are just like me, you know, just as fast, just as strong, just as tall, whatever it may be. So when I got hurt, I'm inexpensive. They can get rid of me.
Yeah.
Just like that.
Yeah.
You know,
so for those of us that are listening, there's a segment of my audience, of course, they're intrigued by this story, but just the technicality of undrafted free agent versus somebody else that I guess teams have a right to. Could you explain that difference? Why a team economically would want to cut you so quickly or whatnot?
Yeah, it just comes down to numbers. You know, when you get drafted, teams give you signing bonuses, they give you contracts, they give you guaranteed money. And they think of that as an investment, you know. So if they invest, you know, $100,000 into you, they want to see that investment go well. But if they don't invest in you and you're just on the team, then there's no real reason for them to want you to succeed. It's like a plus if you succeed.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a great to have if you have an undrafted free agent that does well. So if I'm in a situation where a team doesn't have any investment in me and I get hurt, what's the point of keeping me? Yeah. There's no point. No matter how much they liked me, no matter how much the coach and I got well, there's no money tied to my name. So it didn't make sense. Yeah. It just financially didn't make sense for the team.
Yeah. And what would be the,
What would you say is the kind of the percentage of undrafted free agents that do make it to the league like you did and go on it?
Oh my goodness, it's small. Yeah. It is small. And that's something that I kind of wish before I got into the NFL, I really understood the numbers game.
Yeah.
Because if you're an undrafted free agent, it really just comes down to the fact that, you know, I've seen situations where there's an undrafted free agent who was really good.
Yeah.
And I don't want to put people's names out there, but there was a situation where an undrafted free agent was really good. Just circumstances caused them to be undrafted. Mm-hmm. And they had a first rounder who was not performing as well. Mm-hmm. But because that first rounder has money tied to him, even though the undrafted free agent outperformed the first rounder in all aspects, during training camp, during games, it didn't matter.
Wow.
And that's the thing that's hard because, you know, when you're in high school, when you're in college, it really just comes down for the most part who's producing. If you produce, they're going to play because they want to win. But the NFL is not like that at all.
Wow.
Not at all.
Wow. Okay, so let's go into some of the, you know, you started talking about some of the feelings you experienced that time. You said it was hard. Like, what would you call maybe your turning point, like, as we start to think about, you know, this career transition, right? You're at the point. Take us to where you're like, okay, I don't think I'm going to make it on another team. I need to start thinking about some other things. Like, what was that like?
Yeah, sure. So basically, what happened was I got cut from the team. I think what makes people successful as athletes is that mentality of just keep pushing forward, keep doing whatever you can to get back. And I did that. You know, so when I got cut from the team, I didn't want to hear that I was blacklisted or that it'd be hard for me to get on a team. So I grinded. I went the Canadian football route, I went the arena football route, and I was trying as hard as I can to get some good film out there from some NFL teams to recruit me. Mm-hmm. And then it got to the point where, you know, I was sitting there, I was in Vegas, it was my second arena football team. Mm-hmm. I just turned 27, so the following football season, I would have been 28.
Okay.
And I was like, man, I love this game. This game has been so good to me, but I don't like the spot I'm in right now. I put myself through a lot to be a phenomenal elite athlete, to be an NFL elite athlete. And now that I'm at a point where next season I'm going to be 28 years old. And 28 in football is like you're almost 40 years old. That's like 40 for real.
Okay.
So I'm sitting there thinking like, okay, you know what? I'm going to be 28 years old next year. The chance of a team, even though the chances were already slim because of my injury, if I'm 28 years old and there's a 21-year-old defensive end who has no money tied to him and can do exactly what I can do, the team is going to take a chance on that person as opposed to me.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, it's been a great run. I love this game, but I don't want to put myself in a situation where I'm not being as great as I can be. And I recognize the fact that the NFL is a business, and if I get presented with an opportunity, then it's not going to be that great of an opportunity just because of the fact that I was 28 years old.
Yeah.
Next season.
Wow. So, you know, there's a lot of, and that's great, man. And we talked about this before. I want you to kind of unpack how you, I don't know, you had a lot of stuff going on. I'm trying to see where I want to start. So, you were coming out of the league, but yet and still, before you came out of the league, you talked about in our earlier conversations about how you had this discipline around your money, and just your level of financial literacy was so far above a lot of what we may see or read in the media. Kind of talk about that and how you got to that. Maybe what some of your early money lessons were, and then the discipline you applied once you got in the league.
Yeah, so I think it's kind of rare, but I think naturally I just always liked saving money. I always wanted to have a safety net. I always wanted to be in a situation where, you know, I wasn't struggling because of decisions that I made. I wanted to make sure that everything was fine. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, being in the league, that was really hard.
Yeah.
Because you're 22, 23, 24 years old, and you're making more money than most people have been working for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And you're young. And it's a lot of money is coming fast. And you see all these people on your team that are making, you know, $600,000 per game check.
Yeah.
And those are your teammates. Those are people you hang out with. Mm-hmm. And they're sitting there just blowing money. And you want to be like that. You want to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it took so much discipline. And to be honest, it's hard because sometimes you'll see people just getting new shoes, getting a new car, all this kind of stuff. And you kind of want to meet up with them and you kind of want to be on the same page as them.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really difficult. But I'm thankful for that, you know, that discipline, because while I was playing, I obviously got the situation where I was hurt and I got cut.
Yep.
But if I had not saved my money, then I would have been put in a situation where I wouldn't have had the opportunity to continue pursuing and continue to try to get back on the team because I just wouldn't have had money.
Yeah.
And I saw so many situations where some of my teammates, like those undrafted free agents who got cut or they were injured and they're trying to fight back onto a team, but they didn't save their money while they're playing. And they have a family. So they're in a situation where they can't train. They can't try and go play in the Arena Football League where they're making less money. So they had to quit. Their dreams of football were literally cut short because they weren't able to save their money during football. I even know an example of a guy who, exact same situation as me. He told me, it was funny, we were on a Arena Football team, and he was at a point where he was about to make that decision to quit. Mm-hmm. And he's like, man, like, I remember... It was my birthday. I was in Miami. I just signed with the Dolphins, and I got a little bonus, and I blew through that money. Mm-hmm. If I just even had a fraction of that money right now, yeah. I wouldn't even be talking about quitting.
Wow.
You know?
Wow. Wow. So what were some of your early money lessons? Like, where do you think this discipline came from? I mean, obviously, you are coachable and trainable. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've been able to train your body and things like that to get to the elite level. Where mm-hmm. was you know, kind of tell us how that mosaic of discipline came together that translated into you, you know, saving money and doing the right thing about your money when you were in the league.
Yeah, I think a lot of it too came from my dad. My dad, he studied finance. So like that was one thing that he really just harped on me is making sure that I'm taking care of myself and I'm not putting myself in a tough spot.
Okay.
And because that was instilled in me so young, it just made it so easy for me to just save my money and to budget things accordingly and always plan ahead instead of just, you know, living day to day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, cool, man. That's so great. And you know, a lot of the level of financial literacy obviously can be increased across the board. But I know when you and I were talking earlier about this, I was just so amazed because you're such a rare instance of exercising that discipline, not only exercising this, but you know, like, where did it come from? You know, sometimes the influences that we have on our lives early obviously kind of translate to pay dividends or maybe even not in some cases. So talk about what you're doing right now. Like, how did you figure out you wanted to get to the career that you are now? Like, kind of, you're with, is that Persado? How do you say that?
Persado. Okay. Yeah, that's correct. So basically what happened was, I mean, part of the reason why I chose Cal is because I know that there is a life after football and things happen where you do get hurt or you don't get that contract. And, you know, it's a hard reality to face, but, you know, we're not all going to be that 5-year, $55 million contract.
Yeah. We wish. So right.
that was my magic number too. That was the one that was what I really wanted while I was playing. I always like had that in my head.
Yeah.
On the 5-year.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like I went to Cal. Like I did my best, studied really hard in school, and I knew that one day this was going to come where I'd eventually be doing something else after football. So I was really lucky, you know, and I think that it's always good to surround yourself with good people. One thing that, you know, especially when you're actually in the league, you know, just talk to people, get to know people, because when the time comes when you're done, it's those kind of people are the ones that are going to help you build your career. So
pause right there. Kind of relationships did you make? Like, so this is something I brought up before in previous podcasts with other guests talking about the same thing is like, what were you doing maybe while you were in the league, while you had this status of National Football, you know, league defensive end? Like, when you had that status, were you taking meetings? Were you like networking and things like that, kind of leveraging your name?
Mm-hmm. So I was, you know, and that is by far one of the biggest regrets I had while I was playing is I did it a little bit, but not anywhere near what I should have.
Okay.
The my situations where I did that type of networking came off of chance.
Gotcha.
Where if I went out one night and I met someone and he or she wanted to get to know me better, mm-hmm. and wanted to learn a little bit more about what I was doing, I took those calls and those meetings to talk with them. But there's so much more I could have done. I could have built a LinkedIn page. I could have, you know, reached out to people about business opportunities they're doing. But I really wish I had done that a little bit more than I did. And the thing is, like, when I look back on some of these conversations I had with people while I was in the league, they didn't all pan out to, you know, my career path that I'm on right now. But the little tidbits that I learned from them and understanding of their space definitely helped me out when I was making that transition afterwards.
Gotcha. Would you say there's generally speaking, would you say there's kind of like an apprehension among players to do that? And where do you think it stems from?
To be honest, I'm not sure. I think the biggest thing is people don't really realize how big your brand from a business standpoint is. Mm. Like it, you can do as a professional athlete, you can do so much. And it's just the fact that people want to talk to football players. People want to talk to NFL athletes. They want to be involved in business with NFL athletes.
Yeah.
And if you have a plan, if you have an understanding of what you want to do, then the world is your oyster. There's so much you can do out there in terms of talking to people and networking. And it's right there, literally just on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
If you create a LinkedIn and you start looking out for people, then they'll want to talk to you and you can build yourself off of that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give two quick examples. I know I had a previous guest, Jonathan Miller, out of Arizona. He mentioned a real good point is that when you're a professional athlete, there's rarely a time that you would make a call to anyone that won't take your call for a lunch, for a strategy session, for just a networking opportunity. And he's like, the extent to which guys should be using that, he's like, it's probably really downplayed. And then just how we met on LinkedIn, you know, I know what I'm trying to do in regards to offering financial services and spreading the cause of financial literacy. And so I literally, when I was searching for a profile, I literally put former athletes, former NFL, former NBA, and your name came up and I just shot you a message and you start talking to me. And then here we are now. So it's one of those things where you can actually try to do that. But I just don't know if people have, you know, maybe the gumption or the grit to just try at it, because, you know, eventually some people are going to say no, but then eventually you will get some yeses, right?
Yeah, I 100% agree with you on that one. It really is just the fact that you can explore to any extent you want, and people do want to talk to you.
Yeah.
You just have to make it a priority and take advantage of the opportunities.
Cool. So what else are you up to now? I know you mentioned the sickle cell earlier, which was one of the reasons that, you know, that caused your exit from football. Kind of talk about that story a little bit. How long have you known that you've had the disease, and what kind of awareness that you've kind of built into your routine now, and what are you doing with that?
Yeah, so basically what happened was, kind of going back to my experience in Tampa Bay, I had complications due to my sickle cell trait. Mm-hmm. And the thing about the sickle cell trait, I don't want to get too much into the weeds, but it primarily has to do with acclimation to the sport. If you're not properly conditioned, then that's when you're going to have a situation where things go poorly.
Yeah.
So I had complications from the trait and caused an injury in me. I ended up getting cut. So in my efforts to get back to the NFL, I went back to Cal to train with my former coaches so I could get another shot at a team. Mm-hmm. One of my good friends, who was an defensive end, same position, had the sickle cell trait. And what ended up hurting me ended up killing him.
Wow.
You know, and when that happened, I was pretty hurt. I was pretty distraught, because the whole thing with the sickle cell trait is it is 100% preventable. Mm. And it has everything to do with how coaches, athletic trainers, and athletes communicate with one another.
Mm.
So I was really hurt by what that happened. And, you know, I was looking for opportunities to figure out how I can help. And this even kind of goes back to what we were talking about. You know, as a professional athlete, you know, people reach out to you because, you know, they know that you have a different kind of voice.
Yeah.
So I was looking for ways to help, but I couldn't think of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day, an email thread of about 7 or 8 people reached out to me, and I can see in this thread that they've been talking about me, and they've been talking about what happened to my friend Ted, and they're like, we need Ernest DeRusso to help us. Mm-hmm. We need him to be a voice for sickle cell trait athletes.
Wow, okay.
So they asked me to, so they worked with me over the past couple of months to present at the College Athletic Trainer Society to about 300 athletic trainers and physicians on what it's like to have the sickle cell trait.
Mm-hmm.
How can you communicate with athletes to help them prevent, you know, these situations where people are getting hurt or dying?
Yeah.
And it was amazing, you know, and I'm really excited off of what I've been doing with it, because I know that, you know, with sickle cell trait athletes, we don't necessarily have a voice.
Yeah.
And it's hard. It's hard because as an athlete, you know, you're told to push through things. You're told to ignore how your body's feeling.
Mm.
And normally that can be okay. But when you have the sickle cell trait and it's not handled properly, that can mean death.
Yeah.
You know, and it makes me happy and excited that, you know, I'm working with, you know, the College Athletic Trainer Society. I've had talks with the NCAA to talk to American Academy of Pediatrics at their next conference next year. So I'm doing things to spread this message and to kind of build an advocacy to ensure that, you know, coaches and athletic trainers and even athletes understand how preventable this is and how much they have to be aligned in terms of communication with one another.
Wow. Wow, man. I'm touched. That's great. I mean, you've used, you've used some adversity in your life, losing a friend and, having that really be kind of one of the impetuses for your exit from the game to discover a passion. It sounds like you're really passionate about that. I wish you well. What's kind of on the horizon? You say you're possibly speaking at a, maybe with the NCAA. What mm-hmm. are there any other avenues?
Go ahead. Yeah, so I'm working a little bit with the NCAA, trying to figure out ways in which we can change policy with the current structure with preseason and off-season conditioning. Those are the times where people get hurt the most.
Yeah.
But then also, there are situations where, it's not just at the college and professional level. Like there are athletes at the high school level that pass away too. But the only problem with that is there are so many programs out there. So I'm working with the NCAA to have a talk with the American Academy of Pediatrics so I can talk to physicians and emergency room respondents across the nation on what they can do to recognize signs, how they can help facilitate conversations between coaches and athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm really excited about, because there are so many avenues that need to be helped. And even one that I haven't quite tapped into yet, but I'm really excited to, is the military. Because part of the military with basic training, it's if you're not acclimated, then you can perish from this.
Yeah.
So those three avenues of college and professional sports, the high school level, even the military, I'm slowly building out my live communication between all three of them, so I can do whatever I can to ensure that sickle cell trait athletes don't pass away or don't have serious injury like both my friend and I did.
Yeah, that's great, man. I think I wish that the way that you experienced adversity and challenge and then channel that into your passion. I wish that could just be duplicated and kind of bottled, because there's a lot of great people, but I think sometimes they just don't get the direction, nor do they have, the type of guidance that changes their mindset to start thinking outwardly and how they can help others. There's been a lot of pity party, sad story, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, there's a way that you can flip that and turn it around. So I really admire you for doing that in your case. Talk about maybe one of the kind of the toughest life lessons that you've maybe learned before, during, or after football that you kind of still carry with you right now.
Yeah, I think if there's anything, and this kind of stems from, I really wish I could have done more. In terms of football, I worked my tail off. I always did. But, once I got to the NFL and I realized the difference between, some of these great players and even just being an average player. But, that average player versus the great player is literally millions of dollars.
Mm.
And I think one of the biggest things, I wish that I had dedicated a little bit more time to just perfecting my craft in college. I wish that I'd spent more time in the film room, more time trying to figure out what I was doing right or wrong, as opposed to just going through the motion. I'm not saying that I didn't work hard. I worked really, really hard, and that's the reason why I got to the NFL.
Yeah.
But the thing about the NFL, it's at a certain point, everyone is so athletic. Everyone's so fast, so strong.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that separates that guy who's, a 15-year vet comes from how much he just mastered his craft.
Mm.
And there were so many resources in college that I had that I could have taken advantage of, and I just didn't capitalize off of that.
Yeah. You kind of remind me of a friend of mine. We were talking about the old school, because, they just had the NBA finals and, this comparison about LeBron, the greatest of all time, and Michael Jordan came up. And we were just talking about how, after Michael Jordan left the league first and did the baseball and then came back, how he was so much better, right? Because he had done all the things. And even though he was older, I mean, he still, applied all the things you're talking about. I mean, he probably worked harder. I mean, that veteran mentality, knowing what it takes to get there, he just applied those disciplines. And obviously he was beating out a lot of guys that were, way younger than him. So
that was one of the cool things to see. I remember when I was in Tampa, Rondé Barber was 38 years old at the time. So 38 years old as a defensive back.
That's old.
It's still his technique was so good.
Yeah.
That it didn't matter.
And that came from film study and stuff like that. You're saying
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cool. Well, as we're kind of winding it up, man, if you were, I'm going to give you an opportunity to kind of like speak into the life or into the ear of the current pro athlete, no matter what sport. Obviously, you are, you know, you got some real insight into football, but, you know, athlete, once an athlete, always an athlete. What message would you give to the current athlete out there that, you know, that's, you know, maybe they are undrafted free agent, you know, maybe they're a first round pick. Like, I think there's probably a singular message that, you know, somebody like yourself could give them. What would you say?
Yeah, I mean, I just think for the biggest thing, it's the entire process is hard, whether you're a first rounder or an undrafted free agent, but put yourself in the best situation to be successful. And a lot of people aren't doing the work. They're not, even those first rounders who, you know, they're settled and they don't have to really worry about anything. You know, there's going to be a time where the work you put in before your contract comes up is going to translate to what kind of contract you get. Mm-hmm. If you're that undrafted free agent, have an understanding of this thing might end literally today for no reason. So prepare yourself, whether that's saving money, whether that's working hard, whatever it may be, just be fully aware of your environment and understand that things are always changing in the league and you have to prepare yourself for it. Wow. You got to prepare.
So yeah. Preparation is key at no matter what level. If you're going to continue the game for 10 more years or today may be your last day, you still got to prepare for that next level.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's great, man. Well, Mr. Ernest Owusu, I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with our audience and with me your story. It's been very, very impactful. And I really hope that that you can have continued success with what you're doing, especially around the sickle cell trait and the disease, and really being a spokesperson for people that don't have a voice right now.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I do.
All right. Very good, man. You have a great one.
Okay. You too. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Well, there you have it. Very grateful for the opportunity to share a very powerful story about Mr. Ernest Owusu and what he's doing now. And just to see someone that has really taken tragedy and adversity and turned it around for a real positive. Listen, if you like what we're doing on the Financial Literacy Bootcamp, we would love for you to write us a review on iTunes for the podcast. You can also visit us on the web at www.djh-capital.com or on the blog where we'll be posting interviews like this along with other topics related to financial literacy and things that you can improve your financial health at www.djhendersonsr.com. Also on social media by the hashtag Financial Literacy Bootcamp. You can also contact us at the office at 214-699-7599. And we'll receive emails at info@djh-capital.com. As always, have a great and prosperous day. Take care.